cast a bond. There is no leaving us now. You tied to the chair with those headphones will make you listen to this program, and you will die a horrible death.
Yes, but I see you've put my favorite program on, Media Network Plus, so ha 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 to you.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perrell.
Well, hello everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. This week, I heard a very, very interesting story on the BBC World Service that had to do with Myanmar, or as it's also known, Burma. The first time I went to Myanmar was in 2005, and I remember it like it was yesterday, because when I arrived at the main international airport, I thought to myself, well, I should get a SIM card for my mobile phone. Well, after less than 10 seconds, I decided to not get a SIM card for my mobile phone. The reason is because at the time, just to get a SIM card for your mobile phone cost $2,000. Yes, $2,000, which is a lot of money. Now, over the last few years, we've seen a lot of changes taking place in Myanmar. Aung San Suu Kyi, the reform and democratic leader, was released from house arrest and now has a top-level government position after the recently held elections. There's also a lot of other changes that have been happening in the country. The country has become more open, and mobile providers are flooding into the country. Now, like I said, when I wanted to get a SIM card, it was $2,000. But if you try to go back now and get a SIM card, guess how much it is? Less than $30. Yes, a huge price difference. And it's not just in the capital city, but also in other areas of the country. Mobile phones are having an impact on people's lives. This is the story that aired on the BBC World Service.
We've driven about 3 hours outside of Yangon into the countryside. It's pouring with rain, and even though these communities have very little electricity or running water, what really strikes you is all of the stalls selling 3G and 4G phone connections. Now, I'm just going to come into the house of Do Phu Phu A. She's a local vegetable farmer. It's a lovely little house with a pitch tin roof. She doesn't have her own electricity. I'm just going to sit down and chat to her. Hello. Minglava.
It's been a year that I have the phone. My son bought it for me so they can reach me. My son lives in Thailand, and my daughter helped me to talk to my son on Messenger.
Her daughter is sitting right here. Sue's wearing a National League for Democracy t-shirt, the party of Aung San Suu Kyi. She has a Samsung smartphone with a red cover that sort of makes it look like a bunny. But Sue, will you show me how you talk to your brother?
Just a general conversation about home. Give me your phone number, I will call you today. And you are using Facebook all the time and you're not helping your mom. That kind of stuff. I asked my brother to open a Facebook account for me.
She's scrolling down a number of profiles. Some of them look like genuine photos. Some of them are very stylized.
Most of them are friends from my school. So with the Facebook, I can communicate with them and I can talk to them. And plus, I can get the information and I can read the news.
And can you show me what other apps you have?
Before I used the other application like Lines and WhatsApp. Now I only use the Viber and Facebook mostly.
Okay, so on your home screen here you've got Chrome, which is a browser, Google Plus, radio app. What do you listen to on this radio app?
When I listen to the radio, I listen to the programs that I like and mostly the songs.
How do you charge your phone?
We don't have the electricity at home. It is connected from my aunt's house. it's only in the nighttime, so I charge my phone at nighttime. If I want to charge my phone in the daytime, I go to my friend's house and charge.
And on a future edition of the program, we are going to be looking more in depth at mobile phone use in Myanmar. Well, now time for some information concerning PCJ Radio International. And it has to do with a special Sunday broadcast in July that'll be going to a number of regions. Now, the program, I can't give you too much information about. And at the moment, we only have two frequencies confirmed, but we will have others next week. The program will be targeting all regions: North America, Europe, Africa, Southeast Asia, East Asia, and the Pacific. And it will all fall on a Sunday. And depending on where you are, it will fall on a different time. First is to Europe. And I should mention that all times are UTC. The first transmission will be to Europe from 6 to 8 hours UTC on 7780 kHz. That's 6 to 8 hours UTC on 7780 kHz. And that's July the 17th, which is a Sunday morning in Europe, by the way. For North America, it'll be heard Sunday evening, which is actually July 18th, because the time will be 1 to 3 hours UTC. 1 to 3 hours UTC, July the 18th, which is Sunday evening on 7570 kHz. We are going to be issuing a special EQSL for that program, and we have a number of prizes. Now, I won't be producing and presenting the program. The hosting of it will be done by Paulette McCrory, host of Nash Holos, and I will be doing the production work as well as doing the prologue. Now, all I'm going to say to you right now is that it's a program that you will certainly enjoy, because you will be hearing things that, well, I don't want to give too much away, but all I'm going to say, just tune in. You can find the information at our website, pcjmedia.com. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Charlie 105, repeat to Total Journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
And by the way, in the month of July, there's an article of mine that will appear in the edition, the new edition of the Spectrum Monitor, looking at Voice of Korea and broadcasting in North Korea. So do pick it up if you have a chance. Or I shouldn't say pick it up, because it's now a digital magazine. Anyway, I'm going to be honest with you on something and admit to you something that maybe a lot of people would not want to admit publicly. And that is, you know what? Yes, I am a space geek. I follow stuff on the space programs of various countries all the time, because it is one of my favorite subjects of all time. Just like I like science fiction that has to deal with outer space. It is one of my favorite storylines of all time, and I am a big space geek. Satellites and launching of rockets and the International Space Station. I actually downloaded on my iPad and my iPhone the NASA app, and you can watch live video from the International Space Station. So yes, I'm a space geek. Now, how does this come into radio? Well, believe it or not, there are radio signals that come from space. Now, they're not radio signals like perhaps the ones you're listening to right now, but they're noises generated in space from planets, from meteors, etc., etc. There's an organization in the United States called SETI, which actually was set up to try to find intelligence out there, hopefully picking up radio waves. They have a huge antenna farm, which is absolutely fantastic. And you may remember there was a movie called Contact that starred Jodie Foster, which was, of course, a fictional movie. But Seti played a prominent role in that film. There's also a radio show that Seti does produce. One of the hosts is Seth Soltek.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's been 48 years since the original Star Trek series first aired on television. And in the last 48 years, so many things have changed. We put men on the moon. We have the International Space Station, where astronauts go and live for months and weeks at a time. There's the Hubble spacecraft, Voyager spacecraft, and so many other things as well. Satellites communicating around the world. But we are going to talk about radio. Now, there's many SWLs and DXers that love to get QSO cards from stations that are not, say, targeting their area, stations that are far off, a real rare catch, as they say. So what would happen if you picked up something like this? Well, I know that was rather short, but what if it was a little bit longer and sounded like this? Well, these are, in fact, actual recorded sounds coming from outer space. I should tell you that before you get too excited. No, they're not coming from other intelligent beings. They're coming from different planets and different galaxies. And even meteor showers actually do produce radio signals. So if you're watching a meteor shower and you have the right equipment, you can pick up radio signals from those meteor showers. On August 15, 1977, however, there was a lot of excitement in the United States. Jerry R. Ellman, who was working on a SETI project at the time called Big Ear Radio at Ohio State University, came in the morning and was looking at a printout of what had been monitored during the night. On the printout sheet was the alphanumeric code 6EQUJ5. Now, this, of course, doesn't sound like anything to a lot of people, but this, in fact, was a signal that had been picked up from outer space. There's an organization called SETI, which stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. They monitor the skies 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, using huge radio telescopes. Seth Soltek is one of the scientists that works with SETI. He now joins us to talk a little bit more about this signal, which Jerry wrote in the margin of the paper, WOW. It's become known as the WOW signal. Seth Soltek joins us from California.
Well, you're probably referring, in fact, I'm sure you're referring to what's known as the WOW signal. And that was picked up at Ohio State University using their big radio telescope there, which they were using every night and every day, for that matter, in an automated mode in which they just scanned the sky that was visible from Columbus, Ohio. And every morning, Jerry Amon, one of the astronomers there, would go into the control room where the telescope electronics were, and he would remove the computer printout, because in those days everything was just printed out on paper. And he would look through it to see if anything interesting had happened the day before. And one morning he found this very large signal. It was so large that he circled it and wrote WOW next to it because he was impressed. It became known as the WOW signal, and it is perhaps the most famous of signals that was detected in those times that was seen only once. It was never seen again. The telescope automatically looked 70 seconds later, just over a minute, and didn't see it again. And it's been looked at, or at least looked for, many times since using better equipment and never been seen again. So nobody knows what it was. It was probably just interference. But it has a fair degree of fame simply because it had a nice name, the WOW signal.
Is there any ideas of what this signal could have been?
Well, I mean, it could be, you know, telecommunications interference from Earth. We get that all the time, of course. Satellites pirouetting overhead, things like that. Could be local interference there in Ohio. There are all sorts of transmitters all over the world, for that matter, that make interference that we occasionally pick up. It was just a very strong signal, the way the line printer prints it out. It uses numbers from 0 to 9 and then a few letters, A, B, C, D, and so forth, just sort of in a hexadecimal system, as was very common for computers back then. So it has all this combination of numbers and letters. But the numbers and letters don't mean anything. They are just, of course, indicators of the strength of the signal. So it went up, and then it came back down. And that's exactly what you would expect if some transmitter in space was wheeling overhead as the Earth rotates. So it had the characteristics of being an extraterrestrial signal. But if you don't find it again, it's not science to say that it was E.T.
But since that time, have there been any other types of radio signals or radio waves that have been picked up from space?
Well, at that time, there were hundreds, actually, that were rather similar to the WOW signal. In other words, there were signals that were picked up once, but when people went back to the antennas and tried to find them again, they couldn't. And that was an artifact of the way the experiment was being done back then, when you would simply record the data. But today, we have electronics that's able to follow up right away. If you find a signal, you don't wait for somebody to show up in the morning and look through some computer printout. You just immediately look again and start doing tests to see, is this what you're looking for or not? And ever since that capability has come online, well, we don't get these false alarms anymore.
With all the scanning that is being done out there of the different radio signals and everything, I'm just curious, have you ever been approached by, let's say, a government agency saying, well, look, in case it actually happens that you do get a signal from outer space, this is what you have to do? Is there anything like that in place?
No. No, that's a very that's a popular idea, particularly here in the United States, where people love the idea of government cover-up, government conspiracy, and so forth. Nope, nobody's ever said anything like that to us. We have no red phone that connects us with the White House. Nobody even knows the phone number. And we've had a couple of false alarms ourselves in which we thought maybe this was the real thing, and the government showed absolutely no interest.
But I suppose if you did find the real thing, they would be interested.
Well, I don't doubt that there would be interest. It'd be enormous interest. But our experience is whenever you find a signal that looks suggestive, what happens is the media start calling up. They are interested. So in 1997, we had a signal that looked pretty good for most of a day. And no government agency, including the local government here in Mountain View, California, nobody showed any interest whatsoever. But the New York Times did. So that's what I figure would happen. If we found a signal, it would be a big media story. That's what would happen first.
If we talk about the film Contact, where in the film they receive this signal, and after they process it, they realize it was a television image from the 1930s that somebody picked out and then somebody sent back. How much, let's say, of the radio waves from Earth could effectively go out there and then through, let's say, propagation from the sun or sunspots, being then have that bounce back to Earth?
Well, I don't think anything really bounces back of any significance. The sun is pretty small in the sky, and it's much bigger than anything else. And yes, you can bounce radio waves off the sun. I don't know that anybody's done that, but we've certainly bounced radio waves off the moon, and we've bounced them off Venus in efforts to map Venus, many asteroids. So you can do it. but it's actually quite difficult. But in any case, in the movie Contract, that signal wasn't bouncing back from this planet, presumably around the star Vega, as I recall the story. What was happening is it was being picked up, and then they would use their own transmitters to send it back to us along with some other information. So anything bouncing back is, you know, that's only useful in our own solar system for mapping asteroids and things like that using radar. But in terms of, you know, some of our TV signals bouncing off somebody else's planet around another star, that's not going to happen in any meaningful way, because those things are too far away and too small.
Considering the kind of radio technology that we're using here on Earth, a lot of it is quite old-fashioned. I mean, is it also possible that maybe there's an intelligent life out there that actually is sending radio waves to this planet, but we just don't have the equipment to even hear it?
Well, of course, that's possible. I certainly get emails every day from people who say, oh, radio's so old school, that's an old technology. Well, so is the wheel. But we use the wheel every day because it's the right solution to a lot of problems. I mean, you know, I don't know what other sort of rotating device on your car would work as well as a wheel. So radio is indeed something that's a century old, which, by the way, is not very old in terms of technologies, but nonetheless. And maybe there are better ways to communicate across space that are as fast. Radio goes at the speed of light, after all, and according to relativity, that's the best you can do. Maybe there's physics we don't know that allows some sort of communication mode that's better. But on the other hand, that would be just an excuse to sit around and not do anything, and I think it's better to do the experiment.
I mean, for yourself, I mean, if it happened, let's say tomorrow morning, you get in and you discover that there was a signal that was picked up. How long would you normally wait, let's say, before going public with that, or would you keep quiet with it until you can get more data?
Well, we know what that's going to be like because we have had some false alarms. We don't keep it quiet. There's no policy of secrecy. So whenever we find a signal that looks kind of interesting, everybody's writing emails to their friends, maybe putting something on their blog. Who knows what they're doing? But it would take on the order of a week before we had done enough tests to be sure that what we were seeing was, you know, very likely an extraterrestrial signal and not just interference here on Earth. And that would involve calling up somebody at another observatory, and very likely that would be an observatory in another country, and asking them to verify the signal, for them to find it too, because if they can't find it as well, then you have to suspect that the what you're finding is actually just some sort of glitch in your own system, either in the hardware or the software that's fooling you. So you wouldn't believe it yourself until somebody somewhere else had found it. And all of that, to organize that, to do the observations and so forth, that would take about a week. So, you know, until then, you would say no press conference, but it doesn't really matter whether you have a press conference, because our experience is as soon as you get a signal that's looking the least bit encouraging in terms of being real, the media are all over the story anyhow. So there are going to be a lot of false alarms out there.
I was speaking there with Seth Scholtek, who is with the SETI organization. Their website is SETI.org. That's SETI.org. Seth is also one of the producer-presenters of a program produced by SETI called Big Picture Science. You can find it also at their website. So if there's any of you listening right now hoping to one day receive a QSL card from some far-off planet, some far-off intelligence, I think we might have to wait a little bit longer.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
And if at any point you actually picked up radio signals from outer space, do let us know. Maybe we'll actually have you on the program. Of course, there has to be good propagation, I suppose. That sounds like a terrible segue. But anyway, now time to put our attention on propagation and what we can expect and what's been happening. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith, spaceweather.com says there were zero sunspots on June 24th. SWPC says solar flux on June 28th was 74. RSGB says as the solar flux index at sunspot minimum does not fall below about 66, this gives you some idea of the current state of the sun. From IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through July 2nd. Normal to fair at low latitudes, poor to fair at middle and high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through July 2nd, magnetic conditions unsettled to active to minor storm. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, solar activity at very low levels, negligible chance of significant flares. By late on July 2nd, an increase in geomagnetic activity is likely to active or G1 minor storm levels. FK Jana in Prague says the geomagnetic field will be quiet on July 1st, 16th, and 17th. Quiet to unsettled July 2nd, 5th, and 18th. Active to disturb July 3rd, 11th, and 19th. Quiet to active July 4th, 7th to 9th, 12th. Mostly quiet on July 6th, 10th, and 13th to 15th. From Natural Resources Canada, the 27-day magnetic activity forecast, the greatest DRX in the auroral zone on July 3rd, in the polar zone July 15th. SWPC in Boulder says quiet to unsettled conditions are expected until July 5th, with isolated active conditions possible July 3rd, with ANK indices of 12 and 4. Minor storms possible on July 11th, ANK 20 and 5. Active periods likely July 12th, and isolated active period July 19th with 15 and 4. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 or 8 and 3 on July 1st, 2nd, 5th to 7th, 10th, and 13th to 18th. Solar flux peaking at 82 July 5th to 13th. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave maps predict extreme tropospheric ducting all week off Baja California, West Africa, and Angola. Across the Gulf of Mexico on July 5th, in the central Mediterranean off Tunisia until July 2nd. All week across the eastern Mediterranean, extremely extreme all week all around the Arabian Peninsula as far as Pakistan.
And with that, we've come to the end of today's program. Once again, the information that I gave out later about the special PCJ Radio International transmissions that we have coming up in July, you can find that at our website, pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again very soon. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Could be